2 years before British TV writer Dennis Potter died in 1994, he wrote his own movie-length adaptation of his 1986 miniseries, The Singing Detective. Now that movie has finally been made, and our TV critic David Bianculli considers the wisdom of making it in the first place.
Usually, I let these TV-to-movie adaptations go without weighing in. You didn't hear me complaining about how Eddie Murphy ruined the spirit of I Spy, or how Will Smith couldn't even get the Wild Wild West right, or how Uma Thurman was all wrong as Emma Peel in The Avengers. Usually, when movie studios remake a TV title, it's because that title is just about all it cares about. It's a pre-sold entity, and easier to produce and promote than something generated from scratch. But The Singing Detective isn't just any old TV show. Dennis Potter's multi-layered miniseries was a masterpiece. At the time, I called it the best drama I'd ever seen that was written expressly for television. Almost 2 decades later, I still feel the same way. In the original miniseries, it's the story of a pulp fiction writer named Marlowe, played by Michael Gambon, who's been hospitalized with a crippling, recurring skin condition. The key to his disease, it turns out, is in his mind and in his past. A psychologist works with Marlowe, and often against him, to unlock his memories and traumas in hopes of returning him to health. Meanwhile, the medications Marlowe is taking are making him hallucinate, often with period music from his childhood, and also making him paranoid. To keep from going insane, Marlowe tries to rewrite, in his head, one of his old novels, The Singing Detective, into a screenplay. He casts a healthy version of himself in the lead and dictates to himself the film noir action and Philip Chandlerish narration as he imagines it.
The doorman of a nightclub can always pretend that it's lipstick and not blood on his hands. But how did it get there? Let's be economical, nothing fancy. If he'd smack some dame across her shiny mouth, then he's got both answers in one.
But even as Marlowe is rewriting his book in his mind and his paranoia are getting the better of him. He fears his wife is conspiring against him to find and sell his screenplay out from under him. Before long, characters from his book and events from his past are echoing in what he thinks is real life, and all the plot threads become intertwined. I know. It sounds almost ridiculously confusing. But that's the point. When it was shown here on public television, it took more than 2 hours into The Singing Detective before all those threads and mysterious flashback images revealed themselves and made sense. At 2 hours, the miniseries was just getting started. In the movies, by the time you hit the 2-hour mark, The Singing Detective is over. There are times, and this certainly was one of them, when television can do something better than the movies. When a miniseries is done properly, it allows for the sort of subtext, slow character development, and patient pace that film, in most cases, refuses to take the time to provide. Think of the very best miniseries, like the Western Lonesome Dove, or the full-length TV version of the Royal Shakespeare Company's Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby. And you have to agree that their length also is their strength. Even with Potter cutting and rewriting his own material, no 2-hour version of The Singing Detective could satisfy like the full-length 7-hour version. This movie, though, doesn't come close. Not only does it cut some of the best characterization and texture by putting the patient, here named Dan Dark and played by Robert Downey Jr., in isolation, but it also shifts the musical period to the 1950s, which takes away the psychological reason for its importance. Singing old dance hall songs at the local pub was the only pleasure Marlowe's dad ever knew. It also just doesn't match the film noir atmosphere. In the original, when Marlowe imagined his doctors singing about his troubles, the song was the very appropriate Dry Bones. In this remake, it's a meaningless At the Hop. The casting, I have fewer problems with. Robert Downey Jr. isn't as good in the first hour when his character is bedridden and almost frozen solid. It's only when Dan Dark's skin condition begins to clear up that Downey begins to shine. But from then on, he's good, and the rest of the cast is very satisfying. Robin Wright Penn as his wife and Carla Gugino as his mother all have multiple roles in Dark's twisted imagination, and they shift and mutate accordingly. Adrian Brody, who just won an Oscar, is in here too, and John Polito and Alfre Woodard. What little they're given to do, they do well. Mel Gibson as the psychologist is a good role and a good performance, but the incredibly tense wordplay of the original – like everything else in this movie, isn't delivered as compellingly here.
Word games?
Yeah, sure, I throw you a word. You
I come back with another word.
Yeah, that you associate with the word that I've, you know.
Okay, wait. Yeah, but we gotta agree in advance that it's meaningless. Right, okay. Please. There's no diagnostic value, really.
Fine.
Promiscuity.
Free.
Gift.
Giver.
Sucker.
Mouth.
Fangs.
Wolf.
Whistle.
Scream.
Silence.
Young.
Green.
Old.
Mick Jagger.
Years ago, Dennis Potter adapted another of his wonderful miniseries, Pennies from Heaven, into a movie starring Steve Martin. In that one, the main mistake was glamorizing the musical fantasy sequences. In The Singing Detective, director Keith Gordon's chief mistake is going with Potter's concept of Americanizing the setting and modernizing the music. The Singing Detective was perfect just the way it was. And since you can see it the way it was by buying or renting the DVD set, there's as little point in watching this movie version as there was in making it. As Marlowe and now Dan Dark would say, am I right or am I right?
David Bianculli reviews TV for Fresh Air and the New York Daily News. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.